Chapter 42. I do not. You did not flinch. You should have told me before that it was your sister and not yourself who was entangled with him. ... You brought me to Melchester on purpose to confront him. ... Yes, I did. ... Are you not ashamed? ... I am satisfied. It is better to know the truth by any means than to die of suspense. Better for us both, surely you see that? ... They had by this time got to the end of a long street, and into a deserted side road by which the station could be indirectly reached. Piketty appeared in the distance as a mere distracted speck of girlhood, following them because not knowing what else to do in her sickness of body and mind. Once out of sight here, Ethelberta began to cry. ... said Lord Mountclere, in an agony of trouble, don't be vexed. It was an inconsiderate trick, I own it. Do what you will, but do not desert me now. I could not bear it, you would kill me, if you were to leave me. Anything, but be mine. ... Ethelberta continued her way, and drying her eyes entered the station, where, on searching the timetables, she found there would be no train for Anglebury for the next 2 hours. Then more slowly she turned towards the town again, meeting Piketty and keeping in her company. Lord Mountclere gave up the chase, but as he wished to get into the town again, he followed in the same direction. When Ethelberta had proceeded as far as the Red Lion Hotel, she turned towards it with her companion, and being shown to a room, the two sisters shut themselves in. Lord Mountclere paused, and entered the White Hart, the rival hotel to the Red Lion, which stood in an adjoining street. Having secluded himself in an apartment here, walked from window to window while, and made himself generally uncomfortable, he sat down to the writing materials on the table, and concocted a note. White Hart Hotel. My dear Mrs. Petherwin, you do not mean to be so cruel as to break your plighted word to me? Remember, there is no love without much jealousy, and lovers are ever full of sighs and misgiving. I have owned to as much contrition as can reasonably be expected. I could not endure the suspicion that you loved another. Yours always, Mountclere. ... This he sent, watching from the window its progress along the street. He awaited anxiously for an answer, and waited long. It was nearly 20 minutes before he could hear a messenger approaching the door. Yes, he had actually sent a reply. He prized it, as if it had been the first encouragement he had ever in his life received from woman. My lord, wrote Ethelberta, I am not prepared at present to enter into the question of marriage at all. The incident which has occurred affords me every excuse for withdrawing my promise, since it was given under misapprehensions on a point that materially affects my happiness. E. Petherwin. ... Miss Hoity-toity. ... said Lord Mountclere, trotting up and down. But, remembering it was her June against his November, this did not last long, and he frantically replied. My darling, I cannot release you, I must do anything to keep my treasure. Will you not see me for a few minutes, and let bygones go to the winds? ... Was ever a thrush, so safe in a cherry net before. The messenger came back with the information that Mrs. Petherwin had taken a walk to the close, her companion alone remaining at the hotel. There being nothing else left for the Viscount to do, he put on his hat and went out on foot in the same direction. He had not walked far when he saw Ethelberta moving slowly along the high street before him. Ethelberta was at this hour wandering without any fixed intention beyond that of consuming time. She was very wretched, and very indifferent. The former when thinking of her past, the latter when thinking of the days to come. While she walked thus unconscious of the streets, and their groups of other wayfarers, she saw Christopher emerge from a door not many paces in advance, and close it behind him. He stood for a moment on the step, before descending into the road. She could not, even had she wished it, easily check her progress without rendering the chance of his perceiving her still more certain. But she did not wish any such thing, and it made little difference, for he had already seen her in taking his survey round, and came down from the door to her side. It was impossible for anything formal to pass between them now. "You are not at the concert, Mr. Julian?" she said. "I am glad to have a better opportunity of speaking to you, and of asking for your sister. Unfortunately, there is not time for us to call upon her today." "Thank you, but it makes no difference," said Julian, with somewhat sad reserve. "I will tell her I have met you. She is away from home just at present." And finding that Ethelberta did not rejoin immediately, he observed, "The chief organist, old Dr. Brieve, has taken my place at the concert, as it was arranged he should do after the opening part. I am now going to the cathedral for the afternoon service." "You are going there too?" "I thought of looking at the interior for a moment." So they went on side by side, saying little, for it was a situation in which scarcely any appropriate thing could be spoken. Ethelberta was the less reluctant to walk in his company because of the provocation to skittishness that Lord Mountclair had given, a provocation which he still resented. But she was far from wishing to increase his jealousy. And yet this was what she was doing, Lord Mountclair being a perturbed witness from behind of all that was passing now. They turned the corner of the short street of connection which led under an archway to the cathedral close, the old peer dogging them still. Christopher seemed to warm up a little, and repeated the invitation. "You will come with your sister, to see us before you leave?" he said. "We have tea at 6. We shall have left Melchester before that time. I am now only waiting for the train." "You two have not come all the way from Nelsia alone?" "Part of the way," said Ethelberta evasively. "And going back alone?" "No. Only for the last 5 miles. At least that was the arrangement. I am not quite sure if it holds good." "You don't wish me to see you safely in the train?" "It is not necessary." "Thank you very much. We are well used to getting about the world alone, and from Melchester to Nelsia is no serious journey, later early. Yet I think I ought, in honesty, to tell you that we are not entirely by ourselves in Melchester today. I remember I saw your friend relative in the room at the town hall. It did not occur to my mind for the moment that he was any other than a stranger standing there." "He is not a relative," she said, with perplexity. "I hardly know, Christopher, how to explain to you my position here today, because of some difficulties that have arisen since we have been in the town, which may alter it entirely. On that account I will be less frank with you than I should like to be, considering how long we have known each other. It would be wrong, however, if I were not to tell you that there has been a possibility of my marriage with him." "The elderly gentleman?" "Yes. And I came here in his company, intending to return with him. But you shall know all soon. Piketty shall write to Faith." "I always think the cathedral looks better from this point than from the point usually chosen by artists," he said, with nervous quickness, directing her glance upwards to the silent structure, now misty and unrelieved by either high light or deep shade. "We get the grouping of the chapels and choir aisles more clearly shown, and the whole culminates to a more perfect pyramid from this spot. Do you think so?"
"Yes. I do." A little further, and Christopher stopped to enter, when Ethelberta bade him farewell. I thought at one time that our futures might have been different from what they are apparently becoming. Apostrophe he said then, regarding her as a stall reader regards the brilliant book he cannot afford to buy. But one gets weary of repining about that. I wish Piketty and yourself could see us oftener. I am as confirmed a bachelor now as Faith is an old maid. I wonder if should the event you contemplate occur you and he will ever visit us, or we shall ever visit you. Apostrophe apostrophe, Christopher was evidently imagining the elderly gentleman to be some retired farmer or professional man already so intermixed with the metamorphic classes of society as not to be surprised or inconvenienced by her beginnings. One who wished to secure Ethelberta as an ornament to his parlor fire in a quiet spirit, and in no intoxicated mood regardless of issues. She could scarcely reply to his supposition, and the parting was what might have been predicted from a conversation so carefully controlled. Ethelberta, as he had intended, now went on further, and entering the nave began to inspect the sallow monuments which lined the grizzled pile. She did not perceive amid the shadows an old gentleman who had crept into the moldy place as stealthily as a worm into a skull, and was keeping himself carefully beyond her observation. She continued to regard feature after feature till the choristers had filed in from the south side, and peals broke forth from the organ on the black oaken mass at the junction of nave and choir, shaking every cobweb in the dusky vaults, and Ethelberta's heart no less. She knew the fingers that were pressing out those rolling sounds, and knowing them, became absorbed in tracing their progress. To go towards the organ loft was an act of unconsciousness, and she did not pause till she stood almost beneath it. Ethelberta was awakened from vague imaginings by the close approach of the old gentleman alluded to, who spoke with a great deal of agitation. "I have been trying to meet with you," apostrophe said Lord Mountclere. "Come, let us be friends again. Ethelberta, I must not lose you. You cannot mean that the engagement shall be broken off?" Apostrophe apostrophe he was far too desirous to possess her at any price now to run a second risk of exasperating her, and forbore to make any allusion to the recent pantomime between herself and Christopher that he had beheld, though it might reasonably have filled him with dread and petulance. "I do not mean anything beyond this," apostrophe said she, "that I entirely withdraw from it on the faintest sign that you have not abandoned such miserable jealous proceedings as those you adopted today." "Apostrophe apostrophe, I have quite abandoned them. Will you come a little further this way and walk in the aisle? You do still agree to be mine?" "Apostrophe, if it gives you any pleasure, I do." Apostrophe apostrophe, "Yes, yes. I implore that the marriage may be soon, very soon." Apostrophe the Viscount spoke hastily, for the notes of the organ which were plunging into their ears ever and anon from the hands of his young rival seemed inconveniently and solemnly in the way of his suit. "Well, Lord Mountclere?" "Apostrophe apostrophe, say in a few days, it is the only thing that will satisfy me." "Apostrophe, I am absolutely indifferent as to the day. If it pleases you to have it early, I am willing." "Apostrophe apostrophe, dare I ask that it may be this week?" "Apostrophe apostrophe," said the delighted old man. "I could not say that." "Apostrophe apostrophe, but you can name the earliest day?" "Apostrophe apostrophe, I cannot now. We had better be going from here, I think." Apostrophe, the cathedral was filling with shadows, and cold breathings came round the piers, for it was November, when night very soon succeeds noon in spots, where noon is sobered to the pallor of eve. But the service was not yet over, and before quite leaving the building Ethelberta cast one other glance towards the organ, and thought of him behind it. At this moment her attention was arrested by the form of her sister Piketty, who came in at the north door, closed the lobby wicket softly, and went lightly forward to the choir. When within a few yards of it, she paused by a pillar, and lingered there looking up at the organ as Ethelberta had done. No sound was coming from the ponderous mass of tubes just then, but in a short space a whole crowd of tones spread from the instrument to accompany the words of a response. Piketty started at the burst of music, as if taken in a dishonest action, and moved on in a manner intended to efface the lover's loiter of the preceding moments from her own consciousness no less than from other people's eyes. Do you see that? ... said Ethelberta. That little figure is my dearest sister. Could you but ensure a marriage between her and him she listens to, I would do anything you wish. ... that is indeed a gracious promise, said Lord Mountclere. And would you agree to what I asked just now? ... yes. ... when? ... a gleeful spark accompanied this. As you requested. ... this week? The day after tomorrow? ... if you will. But remember what lies on your side of the contract. I fancy I have given you a task beyond your powers. ... well, darling, we are at one at last, said Lord Mountclere, rubbing his hand against his side. And if my task is heavy, and I cannot guarantee the result, I can make it very probable. Marry me on Friday the day after tomorrow, and I will do all that money and influence can effect to bring about their union. ... you solemnly promise? You will never cease to give me all the aid in your power until the thing is done? ... I do solemnly promise on the conditions named. ... very good. You will have ensured my fulfillment of my promise before I can ensure yours, but I take your word. ... you will marry me on Friday. Give me your hand upon it. ... she gave him her hand. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.